Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Thank you so much, Erica, for joining us as we think about parents having to defend our children's education. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Erica Sanzi. I'm sorry, I said Sarzi. Erica Sanzi. So take me through it, because we've seen it in our area, especially with the overreach and the separation, the attempts to separate kids from their parents, parental rights. So take us through, first of all, what parents defending education, what that means to you.
That's a really good question, and it's unfortunate in ways that an organization with that name is even necessary. We launched in 2021 in large part because what we were seeing was not just a complete lack of transparency, where parents were, you know, running into a brick wall when they were asking, you know, what was happening in the classroom, or they wanted to see curriculum. And again, that started with COVID. For many parents, their first sort of foray into feeling like you're having the door slammed in your face was their advocacy around school closures and mask mandates. But that's quickly morphed into other issues as they became much more aware of what was happening in their kids' schools and also what wasn't happening in their kids' schools. And certainly they became aware of what appeared to be a priority shift away from sort of the fundamental academic subjects that you would expect your child to be, you know, learning about and also to be the focus. And instead, they were hearing a lot of ideology, a lot of activism, a lot of politicization, and also a lot of suppression of free speech, mm-hmm. where what's considered a perfectly normal opinion that people can debate was suddenly being labeled as hateful, and students were being told that they couldn't ask certain questions, that they couldn't hold certain opinions. And so, again, that's also parents. You know, you're not only looking out for your kids because you want there to be developmentally appropriate content, and you don't want them telling their children that they should keep secrets from their parents, but you also I just lost my train of thought. Oh, but you also don't want your child's speech and the free exchange of ideas to be suppressed, particularly when they're in a public building funded with public dollars, where the First Amendment obviously does exist.
So we're continuing the conversation with Erica Sanzi, who is the Director of Outreach for Parents Defending Education, a nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit, with the mission of really fighting against the indoctrination in schools, something that we've all talked about a lot. I've focused on this so much. And Erica, we appreciate you being here. There are so many parents over these years that I've talked to. Some of them are still, would you believe, going through the courts. They're being sued by their local county. And I know that you're an educator as well as a you know, on a school board. But some of these parents are, you know, moms especially, who just started out by filing a Freedom of Information request. And it was during the pandemic. And they started, and some of these moms I've talked to, and they were Democrats. And all of a sudden, they saw this happening and said, whoa, what is going on? And we've watched them in real time evolve. And now they're Trump supporters. They said the Democrat Party left them. And I feel like this is such a great grassroots organization that you're part of, because it really started, I believe, during the pandemic when all of this was revealed to us. But my sense, Erica, is it's like that song, How Long Has This Been Going On?
Yes. So everything that you're right about everything, tons of lifelong progressives, lifelong Democrats, also, you know, just sort of like apolitical people, you know, had their eyes opened wide. And I think what's fair to say is there were a lot of schools some of this had seeped in, where the gender stuff and the sort of obsession about racial identity, gender identity, a lot of this had already begun, particularly after Trump won in 2016, because there were just a lot of hysterical people working in schools that could not contain, you know, their freak out over the election results.
Yes.
So that was sort of part of it. And so we did, especially in sort of very blue and very progressive school districts. So already happening, you know, in Oregon, out in Washington State, some areas in Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey. Like that was, and in a lot of very sort of expensive independent private schools. We saw that. Then 2020 happened. And between the, again, the upset over the closures and the mask mandates and just the COVID sort of protocols that, again, in certain school districts, largely progressive, largely blue school districts, you know, these protocols were pretty crazy. And what I've discovered as I've traveled around is that a lot of people's, their school went on pretty much as usual, and they had no idea that there were other people in the country whose schools were closed for 18 months. And so that, again, got people involved. Then they began to see, add to that the murder of George Floyd, and now schools that maybe weren't so obsessed with racial identity and with almost like using racial division in service of what they thought was like a virtuous cause, mm-hmm. but instead what they were doing was the opposite. That really came in because, if you may remember, and I'm sure listeners remember, after George Floyd was killed, every company, every nonprofit, and every school system felt that they had to do something. And I'm sure a directive went out, do something. And so they sent an email to all their customers or an email to all of the families that they serve. And then they decided they were going to invest, and they were going to, you know, suddenly it was going to be, everything was going to be about equity, and they were going to focus on the problems of whiteness. And they were going to, you know, focus on any groups that were historically marginalized. The problem is that when you suddenly say, oh, my God, we have to do something, and then you delegate that, that person then goes and buys that shiny object on the shelf and spends a lot of money on programs. In 99% of the cases, the programs that they purchased with taxpayer dollars were 100% based in critical theory. So critical race theory and critical gender theory. And that is how parents went from thinking that their schools were maybe a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. over the top in some ways, but not insane. That was where parents suddenly thought, wait a second, why is my child being told they have to sit in a group with people of the same skin color at lunch? Or they have to go to break up into these special groups where they are separated by their skin color? Or why is there a special group for every single skin color except for the white students? So this weird obsession that brought schools to a really destructive place. And not only were they making things worse, morale among students, morale among staff, morale among parents, but they were also spending a huge amount of public money on programs that were destructive. And so, again, I think that's part of why we've seen this pushback. The other piece I would add is that when parents would ask questions, now, if a parent says, hey, you know, can I see the math textbook that you guys are using? Mm-hmm. Nobody ever says a word. Of course they say yes. But if parents were asking anything about the equity programming, the racial programming, the gender programming, the social emotional learning, any of that, they were basically being told to pound sand. They were being told, you can't see the content, the lessons, the curriculum, the books that we use, the materials. And that's a problem for two reasons. One, it's illegal because federal law guarantees parents the right to view and inspect all materials used in their kids' schools. And what happened was, the math book, they never had a problem with, right? Because it's not controversial, really. But anything that was in this bucket of sort of controversy, they were telling parents they couldn't see them, and they would hide behind the argument of copyright, to which I would again say, well, you never said I couldn't see the math book. You never said I couldn't see the Spanish workbook. You never said I couldn't see, and those are all copyrighted. So they were hiding materials. We saw a similar issue with parents. And again, like, people listening may not know, but now schools are the vehicle through which surveys are given to children. And some of them come through the Department of Education, and some of them are these behavioral risk surveys that the state wants to collect information about, you know, drug use and smoking and sexual activity, and they use the schools as the vehicle. Well, the surveys have become increasingly intrusive, and increasingly inappropriate, particularly for young kids, mm-hmm. because they give the same survey to a sixth grader who's 11 or 12 as they give to a senior who's 17 or 18. And on these surveys, what we see are, you know, questions like, this is an example that I saw on the survey in my own state when my own son was 11. Mm-hmm. Have you ever created a suicide plan? Now, I understand why a state feels the need to get a hold of, you know, what's happening among with suicidality among youth. On the other hand, that does not need to then become the problem of every other kid mm-hmm. in the state. So a lot of kids have never thought of a suicide plan, have never heard of such a thing.
Now you're planting it.
They're maybe predisposed to anxiety. And now suddenly these questions, they're asking them, how many sexual partners have you had? Again, that's a question that makes sense to a small number of 11 and 12-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
very small. So what happened was they sort of like they made the outlier and they made the pathological the default for everybody. So then it was, you're going to answer questions about sex, you're going to answer questions about race, you're going to answer questions about suicide, you're going to tell us your pronouns, all because a very small percentage of people, for me, that may have been relevant, they made it the default for everybody. And I think that's largely also why we're seeing this huge backlash.
Yeah. And so in this, I guess a lot of questions arise because do children have HIPAA rights? Because I would think if those were adults in a workplace, they would have the option to opt out. So do kids have the right to opt out of it? Number one, meaning their parents.
But yes, they do.
So are the parents even notified that they're getting those, for example, the survey in school, because that could be under the umbrella of mental health, right?
Yes. So there's anytime a survey is being given that's going to ask any questions about, I think it includes like anything of a sexual nature, anything about religion, anything about something about like your parents' views on certain things. I forget all the mm-hmm. criteria. It's called the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment. It goes by PPRA, if anybody wanted to look it up. And it is a federal law, but here's what I've learned. People are so busy being trained in their schools of education about stupid stuff that is useless. Not a single school administrator that I spoke to had ever heard of the PPRA.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do, and again, I can speak to this not only in my role at our organization, but also as a parent, is that oftentimes you would get sort of like a last minute email that the kids were going to be given a survey that, you know, on Tuesday or whatever. You have no idea really what's going to be on it. And instead of having you opt in, you have to opt out. So automatically, a very small number of people opt out of the surveys because, again, like, there's a flurry of emails always coming. So number one, you might have missed it. Number two, you don't even give it a second thought because you can't imagine mm-hmm. what kind of questions are on there now. And you, it ends up being like too last minute. Like by the time you open the email, they already took the survey. The other thing is a lot of schools didn't have good systems in place so that if you opted out, that they would say, oh, if you want to opt your child out, just email me, the principal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the principal can't manage that. So then what ended up happening often was like the parent had opted the kid out, but the kid still ended up being given the survey. So I have actually argued in the past for an opt-in, which, again, I understand why people don't like that because they feel like they won't be able to collect enough information to make it significant. But my argument is, listen, like if you're going to use the school to ask questions, again, that are like so wildly out of bounds and inappropriate, particularly with these younger students, then you need to give parents a much better sense of what you're asking and give them a much longer timeline so they can make a decision. And again, I would argue, particularly in these lower grades, like potentially make it an opt-in scenario. Because again, you're asking, it's a lot of questions about, largely about race, largely about gender. And even then, like there were questions for young kids that were asking them how they identify. And there was, you know, gender queer was on there. Non-binary was on there. Gender fluid was on there. I mean, what? Like, first, a lot of these kids, they don't even know what they're being asked.
Right.
And it's like, you're introducing them into this weird, like, again, like, that's an ideology, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be like taking Scientology and now saying, this is now the law of the land in my classroom and in my school.
Mm-hmm.
which we would all say that's not appropriate. And the same thing goes with gender ideology, right? Like that is just not a, like if people want to hold that belief system, that's their right, but it's not their right to then make that dogma and a required belief system in a school with other people's children.
And, you know, so Parents Defending Education, you were among those. I mean, obviously, you took to task the Biden administration with the Title IX issue. Where do you now with a new administration, new executive orders, should parents just say, oh, everything is switched back? Or do parents need to be, you know, diligent with this? What is a parent to do? Your advice, Erica Sanzi.
Yeah, you definitely need to stay vigilant because, for example, when the executive order came out the other day about girls in sports, and the other executive order that came out about gender ideology, I think, and biological reality, I think they called it. A lot of states have already come out and said they're not going to follow it.
Yeah, Pennsylvania,
stated. There's quite a few states. I can't list them all, but there's as far last I looked, I think there were 15 states that had already come out and said like we're ignoring this. So that's one reason why parents need to remain vigilant is that there are plans in the works for entire states to not abide by any of what the president has done. The other thing is that you often have like particular individuals, right? So you might even have like a school, a superintendent may say one thing, but you'll have like rogue actors in your school or on your school board that are also... and we've seen that a lot with a lot of the anti-Israel and sort of anti-Semitic, content and behaviors in certain school districts. And sometimes it's literally just like it might be two people on the school board or it might be one or two teachers that are just like very extreme in their views, very militant. And they're bringing that into the school and they're bullying staff members and they're bullying students. So, again, that's why you kind of have to be eyes wide open. We also see quite a bit of that within some union activity. So it may not be as bad, let's say, like at the national level, though it's pretty bad. But like the Massachusetts Teachers Association, for example, has been doing some really, really like appalling things related to Israel. That, again, you would just say to yourself, like, what does this even have to do with the teachers union? Why are you even talking about this and making this an issue? But putting that aside, you know, that makes its way into the schools. And it's kind of like we talk about how you have this captive audience of other people's children.
Yes.
And then you decide that you have the right to tinker in the minds of those children in that captive audience, because by law they have to go to school. And so it's a problem. And it's always been, like I tell people, I mean, I worked in schools up until 2015. I was in the union in two states. There was always a liberal bent in schools and there was always a tilt, you know, but it wasn't ideological. It wasn't dogmatic. You weren't accused of being hateful for having a different opinion.
Yeah.
You weren't encouraged to snitch, literally, to fill out an anonymous tip in a bias reporting system against your classmates because, you know, they were acting out a Saturday Night Live skit or they were acting out a comedian sketch and you found it offensive. Mm-hmm. So things have changed dramatically since, for sure, since I was in schools in 2015 and then again 2020. And so... I always also say, like, it's not universal, but it is pervasive.
So how does Parents Defending Education, you know, create the scaffolding for parents across the region to unite on some of these issues?
There's definitely a lot of things that we do. Like, one thing is we have an incident map up on our website at defendinged.org. Mm-hmm. And so people can look to see, you know, have there been incidents reported, you know, in my district, in my county, in my state. So that's one way. We also have a ton of parent groups listed on our website. And these are sort of, many of these are groups that came into existence during COVID. Mm-hmm. And some are, you know, incredibly sort of like basic, small, like, you know, we helped them, like, you know, they utilize our resources on how to write a letter to the editor, for example.
So we'll check
how
out.
To file.
Yeah, we'll have everybody check out.
Request.
Yeah, there's so much information. So it's Parents Defending Education. Check out the site. Follow Erica Sanzi on social media. There's so much to learn here. Director of Outreach. Erica, thank you so much. Really appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.